Hall. Okay. I knew I couldn't get about 1,000. All right. The appellant may approach. And it's Mr. Jenkins?
That is correct, Your
Honor. All right.
Good morning, Justices. Opposing counsel. May it please the court. Again, my name is William Oliver Jenkins, and I represent the appellant in this case, Jennifer Neve Hall. And this is an appeal of an order entered May 10th, 2017, by the district court granting grandparent visitation rights to the Atzmeyers, the appellees in this case. Section 43 of 1892. As the court is, I'm sure, fully aware, the standard of review in this case is de novo on the record, and an affirmance of the district court order if there is no finding of a judicial disruption. The relief my client is requesting from this court is a reversal of the district court granting grandparent visitation on the grounds that the district court did refuse its discretion in granting the grandparent visitation, that the record is factually inadequate and fails to rise to meet the high standard of proof and burden proof required upon the appellees in this case.
If the record is inadequate, does that go to the nature of the evidence that was presented at the trial?
Yes, Your Honor. It does go to that. If we go back to the actual statute itself, 43-1802, it is very clear that it directs the court that it must find on clear and convincing evidence, which is the highest standard of evidence in civil cases, that there is a significant beneficial relationship from grandparent to child, that it is in the best interest of the child or children that this significant beneficial relationship continues. And third, that the visitation does not interfere with the parent-child relationship.
Which prong do you assert was not met here?
I assert that all three prongs were not met in this case, Your Honor. The first prong, the significant beneficial relationship, I think it's very telling that in the statute, it's not just a beneficial relationship. That's any relationship. That can be a transactional relationship. This is more than that. This is a significant beneficial relationship. And with that term significant, what we're really striving for is evidence of the quality of the relationship. In previous rulings in the Nelson versus Nelson, where the Supreme Court dealt with this specifically, there are very similar facts where the grandparents described the amount of contact that they had with the grandchildren, but failed to provide any sort of testimony or evidence regarding the quality of that. And the court was...
What kind of evidence did that require?
Well, in Nelson versus Nelson, the Supreme Court intimated that the evidence and testimony would show the nature of the relationship. The parent's relationship was trusting, loving, simple, acrimonious, anything that would qualify that relationship rather than just a cold, transactional quantity of the contact between the grandparent and child.
But isn't that the job of the district court?
Isn't it to
evaluate the evidence that's presented and to make that determination based on the evidence that's presented?
It is, Your Honor. But when there's no evidence describing the significance, this is the key point here. You've got to understand that the high standard here is due to the nature of the parent-child relationship. This is a fundamental liberty that has been well established in the U.S. Supreme Court. And in the attempts to protect that fundamental liberty, the Nebraska legislature attempted to establish a high bar to clear in order for a grandparent, for a district court to order grandparent visitation. Previously, there had been.
Here in this case, there was evidence of the various activities they engaged in together.
Correct.
Family vacations, museums and zoos, playing games, going to movies, watching movies. And there was testimony that there was a loving relationship between the grandparents and the grandchildren. So what else?
Well, Your Honor, if you really pay attention to the evidence is really devoid from the grandparents of what kind of relationship they have with the grandparents. Yes, they describe an annual Minnesota trip in which 20 plus other family members didn't describe any kind of one-on-one with the grandchildren. They describe these family dinners where there were large family Sunday dinners, but they fail to describe any kind of one-on-one relationship that they have with the children. They talk about how they occasionally would go to games of the eldest boy, Michael, how they once took Maya on a horseback riding trip, and how much she loved that, but they failed to describe any other further activity. Further efforts to engage her in that activity, they failed to they described how Michael, the oldest boy, loved hockey, but failed to describe in any way how they facilitated that interest. There's really devoid of any descriptive quality of how that relationship really is. Furthermore, in Nelson versus Nelson, we have a situation where the grandmother of the children provided daycare for the child for 2 years. And in that same situation, the Supreme Court said, hey, that's not enough. You're just describing the nature of your relationship. There is no description of the quality of that nature, or the quality of that relationship.
Am I correct in my reading of the record that neither side called either of the children as witnesses? Is that correct?
That is correct.
Nor did either side have an expert witness testify?
That is correct.
I was struck by that because it seems to me that if truly that's your argument, that this was not a burden of proof that was met on the quality of a high standard of proof, wouldn't the best witnesses have been the children?
I suppose so, Your Honor, but that's not my client's burden of proof. That's the grandparents.
But you could have called them also, could you not? Had you wanted
we could have, Your Honor, but I think under the circumstances, and if you read the record there, I think there was a contentious relationship between the mother and the grandparents. And I think it was wise my client not to call the children, particularly when she testified that after visitation with the grandparents, the children's behavior deteriorated, sometimes becoming physically violent. And during the time when the grandparents were away in Texas during the months of January and February and did not visit the grandparents, there were no such issues. So, I think...
I don't think it's necessarily unusual that young children would be upset that their father has died and looking for somebody to blame. But again, we have a record that's devoid of testimony by the children and testimony by any expert witnesses. So,
well, Your Honor, I agree with you on that fact, and I would say that goes to the grandparents' burden of proof, and I don't think that they met that burden and cleared that standard of proof and clear and convincing evidence.
But again, Judge Fulton disagreed with you on that. So once that testimony was in, then the burden then shifted to your client to somehow then discredit?
Well, I think there was ample testimony by my client that did discredit it. Her testimony of the behavior of the children after visiting the grandparents, which does not seem to be due to the fact that father had passed away, although that is, you know, a hard transition for any child at that age. But it seems to be occurring specifically soon after they visit the grandparents. And she did provide ample testimony of the grandparents' alienation of her and the separate and of the children, particularly at the funeral, where the grandparents wouldn't even let the kids, the mother sit with the children at the father's funeral.
And yet the visit continued for a couple of years after their father's death.
Yeah, and then
didn't she testify that she felt continued contact was in the best interest of the children?
Sometime in the future, if the relationship between her and the grandparents somehow repaired, if I may have a few moments to completely answer your question, if you remember in the record, my client, Ms. Niehal, reached out to the Gatzmeyers and said, hey, look, I'm concerned about these kids. They're coming home after visits with you and they're acting out, and their behavior is erratic, sometimes violent, and let's discuss this. And it was met with complete contempt by the Gatzmeyers, and saying, hey, we don't believe you, you're exaggerating. And it was at that point that the mother finally said, okay, you know what, enough is enough. I'm not letting the kids go. Thank you.
How much time did we lose? Okay. Would you add that to Mr. Escott's side? Yes, can we see Mr. Jason?
Good morning, Your Honor.
Mr. Escott.
May it please the Court, my name is Michael Escott, and I represent Carolyn and Robert Gatzmeyer. I disagree with Mr. Jenkins on whether verdict proof on those three elements was met. And I will also point out to the Court that Judge Polk's rulings are given some deference as to whether there was any abuse of discretion. As far as the beneficial relationship is concerned, I think what Judge Moore said is accurate. I don't know what else could have been presented. A description was made of the relationship from the time the kids were born up to 2010 when the parties divorced. The relationship from the time of 2010 to when their son passed away was established that they would see the kids during his 50% of time. From 2014, the son's death until she cut off contact, about to cut off contact in 2016, the same type of relationship continued. And this is acting as a daycare provider, taking them to activities, taking them on a yearly trip to Minnesota, having Sunday dinner. I think what the argument that the appellant makes that somehow we have to emotionally get inside the children's heads and my client's heads isn't accurate. There's testimony that they love their grandchildren, that they enjoy spending time with them, that the grandchildren enjoy spending time with the grandparents. There's also testimony from the second witness told by the appellant, Mr. Butler, the boyfriend, testified how they love their grandparents, how they enjoy spending time with their grandparents. I don't know what else could have been presented other than what was. Judge Pirtle brings up a good point. There weren't any experts, and the kids were called. Those were certainly decisions made on my behalf, on my client's behalf, by me. I didn't think it was necessary, especially when the only thing the mother had to say in opposition, and without any specifics, just a general statement, they would sometimes come home and be angry or have outbursts.
Well, what about the argument that there was evidence for mother's attempt to discuss these problems with the grandparents that were met without any response?
Well, and I think what the record shows is that when they were summarily cut off without any notice, they responded to them, they wanted to keep having contact, and the mother said no, and that's when I came back into the situation. Perhaps the grandparents should have made one more attempt, but I don't think that would have changed the bottom line, especially when you see the testimony of the mother at trial when she indicated, you know, I'm not going to allow any contact, even though, as you pointed out, she did acknowledge that there was a, I don't remember the exact words, but good contact between the kids and their grandparents. And that was an admission of her part. But as I said, I don't, if the kids didn't testify, if there wasn't an expert testifying, Judge Polk took that and believed that there was sufficient evidence, and I believe he was correct in doing so. As far as best interests, the mother testified, she thinks it's important that the kids have contact with the other side of the family. As far as what the record reflects, my clients are mainly maternal side of the family to that. Another admission by the mother that I think is to cut off contact, especially when the mother for that 2 year period continues to allow it, just isn't consistent with the position that there is a beneficial relationship. It's not in their best interest. As far as the third part of the test, the interference with parent-child relationship, I don't think there was any evidence of it. Other than saying the kids at times were a little angry when they came back, which is Judge Pirtle's comment, was a common thing. There was no evidence to show there was a disruption in parent-child relationship.
Well, this is the overarching issue in these cases, though, taking away the authority of the parent to make decisions.
I agree. And if she had had evidence that would override what the track record had been, even with her own action, then I would agree that they would have something to talk about. But there was no evidence. The overriding part of this is that we're talking about kids spending one overnight a month, the week in Minnesota, a few hours on Christmas Eve, and a few hours on Easter. That is the extent of contact, and that certainly doesn't interfere with the mother's ability to control who her kids see. And again, whether the relationship between my clients and the mother is contentious, I think the Hammett case stated that even if that relationship is strained, that is not a reason to overcome a significant and beneficial relationship between the grandparents and grandchildren. And that's all that I have on
that. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Mustaine. And I believe the time we've all used on Mr. Jenkins, so parties are excused. We'll take the case under the top. Thank you.
Thank you.